listening to the Silky Smooth Sounds of the Green and Red podcast. This week in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt, COP27 is happening. You may remember last year we did a number of shows on COP26 in Glasgow and talked to people on the ground in Glasgow, and we're planning to do that this year as well. The backdrop for what's going on at COP27 is Egypt is a very different country than Scotland. And there's a lot of fears around crackdowns on dissent and using the COP as an opportunity to do that. So we're going to be talking with someone on the ground just to get a little bit of a feel of what's going on. And then we'll probably have another episode sometime soon in the future around this. But we're talking with a climate activist currently on the ground in Egypt. Welcome to Green and Red.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. I guess my first question is, what is the mood of on the ground there in Sharm el-Sheikh?
Yes. Well, it's kind of an interesting backdrop when you come into Sharm, because like from the sky, you can see lots of resorts, but you can also see the failed resorts that happened because of the twin tragedies of the COVID pandemic, which depressed tourism. Sharm el-Sheikh normally is a tourism economy. And then the Ukraine war also happened and is continuing on. So this used to be a popular destination being close to Ukraine. And so travel from Ukraine and Russia obviously is not as free as it used to be. And you see some failed resorts as you're flying in. And you see a lot of people who are helping to make the COP happen, who are from Egypt or locals from Sharm. They have a lot of pride in their country, and they should. It's beautiful here with the vast mountains right next to the sea, and they've done a number of things to beautify the area by planting flowers and palm trees to really show the best side of what Egypt has to offer in this resort area. So it's beautiful, and they are very concerned for our safety. So as you come from the airport to the COP, there are a number of armed police standing in the middle of the meridians of the roads, and a number of checkpoints that you go through. So for somebody who grew up in the West, seeing such a large number of checkpoints and thinking about how it's really not possible to travel freely. There is not a robust public transportation. And anytime you go somewhere in the local community, somebody at the place you're staying knows about it. So the COP is a pretty typical COP once you get on the inside with, you know, there's hardly any food, there are long lines for the bathroom, there's so much interest and such a hunger to resolve the climate chaos that we're all facing as a collective people. And it's the hospitality is wonderful. It's just kind of the on the outside of COP where I have to think about what it's like to be traveling around and completely reliant on a system that was built 2 months ago, or perhaps I am exaggerating here how long they've been planning to have this COP. And they've dedicated a huge amount of resources to it with huge charter buses, taking people back and forth with the public transportation, with the amount of food, with the planting to beautify the area. So it's just a place where you can see people are very proud of Egypt and are doing their best and also are doing a lot to make sure that we are safe. And I do appreciate that.
Now, I've seen in The Guardian and other sources that Egypt has conducted a series of mass arrests of people accused of being protesters. Is that what their safety security concerns are around, or are there other concerns?
Well, I see a lot of type of security structure when you are expecting bombings, like right. So there's like dogs that sniff cars before they go in and out of places. There's dogs that sniff you before you go in and out of a place, not at COP, but at the airport.
Right.
I feel like where I'm from, like the dogs are used to smell out drugs, but these ones are definitely smelling people, mm-hmm. not holding, right? Which is a little bit different. They're looking for something different than what I'm used to in Western countries. And also they use these, I don't know what they're called, but I think they're either cameras or they're sensors that they have on long sticks that they walk around the perimeter of a vehicle. And so everything is gated, and the security, and it doesn't matter if it's, you know, if you're going into a shopping area or a resort, a hotel area, or a community area, it's gated with security guards who come out and talk to the driver. And the driver has to show their credentials, or you have to show your credentials before you can go inside any place.
Right. How is it for residents of actual Sharm al-Sheikh? Are they just staying away? Are they staying home? Or,
well, a lot of them are working this COP. They're the drivers. They're the people providing food, construction. You know, they are employed by this COP, and so there's that side of it. But then I think for people who also live here, I've heard from other COP attendees who can read Arabic about the multiple notices going out to local people about where they can and cannot travel in their own home for 2 weeks at a time, because the COP is here and the Egyptian authorities want to keep a close, you know, they want to keep a tight rein over everyone. So as for the mass arrests, I have not seen any mass arrests in Sharm el-Sheikh, but I have heard of arrests in Cairo and other places in Egypt, of Egyptian civil society rising up and using COP as a way to talk about how there cannot be any climate solutions without open, free civic space, which is very important. I mean, a climate defender over the last 10 years, has been killed every other day. So you think, I grew up thinking about the climate as like, oh, save the whales, save the rainforest. I did not think about it as companies murdering people, or private security, or repressive governments murdering people simply because people say, you know, we deserve better than polluted lands. We do not want our waters and the rights that we have taken away from us since time immemorial. But honestly, that is the situation for many land and climate protectors who are living in the global South.
Yeah. And that's you know, that's something that we see, like Global Witness puts a report out on that about how land defenders and people fighting mining projects and fossil fuel extraction projects are targeted all over the world.
Right.
But it's,
and so they're at somewhat odds with the Egyptian government, because the Egyptian government is into this COP delivering on the money that it is owed the global South. And for Egypt's negotiations, they want money because they are soon going to be facing a famine. And so they want to use this COP as a reason to be addressed funds to help their populace. Meanwhile, civil society in Egypt is not opposed with that goal, but is also pointing out how can Egypt win these funds for their people if they're not listening to all of their people and their needs. Like there's just no environmental justice without a robust civil society. So for Egypt to demand environmental justice at the very top level, facing a massive climate disaster, and to turn around and say, okay, we get to tell Western nations what to do, but you don't get to tell us what to do. It's a little bit of a difficult stance that they're putting themselves in.
And Egypt is one of the countries that's affected by the war in Ukraine and the sort of cutoffs of Russian wheat and grain exports. And Egypt is one of the main countries I read about where there's like a food crisis slash impending famine related to that, correct?
I think that's what it's coming from, but I have not read exactly what the source of the impending food shortages are going to be, except for climate related issues.
Excellent. One other question I have is just with the civil society in Sharm el-Sheikh, is there a protest zone? I read about at least an Indian climate activist who was like doing a march to raise awareness about climate and climate justice issues being, you know, arrested or detained by the Egyptian authorities. And is there any sort of any level of freedom of expression, I guess you could say, going on there?
Yes, I today when I was at the COP conference, I happened to be walking past, I think it's the German pavilion, and the sister of the jailed British Egyptian activist, I'm probably saying his name incorrectly, I'm sorry, Ala Abd El Fattah, she was there at COP. Sana Sif is her name. And she was telling the media about, they don't even know if he's alive. So this is pretty significant that she is able to come to COP and directly plead for her brother's case. He's one of the activists that Egyptian civil society has made demands that he be released to show that Egypt means it when they say that they are trying to represent their people at COP. And so it's fairly remarkable because for us, when we were coming to COP and deciding what we would and would not say, we were thinking, we're not going to criticize the Egyptian government directly because, you know, repression of civil society is not a uniquely Egyptian problem. It is a unique Egyptian problem, like the hypocrisy I was talking about before, that they're hosting COP and, you know, are making demands on behalf of their people that they are also repressing. But Latin America, like Berta Cáceres in Honduras was killed. Climate justice for peoples who are so tied closely to the lands in the global south looks very different than what I grew up thinking of growing up in a Western country.
Yeah. Did they create a fenced-in protest zone there at the COP for Western, even Western NGO people to go protest?
Yeah, there is a protest zone. I've heard of it. I have not visited it. And there's, you know, the typical green zone. But in the activist community that I'm connected to, what we're concerned about is the safety of Egyptian civil society. That if we protest outside of the protest zone, if we protest in the blue zone or the green zone, that any solidarity that we've built with Egyptian civil society will come under scrutiny. Yeah. And the green zone and the protest zone is a honeypot situation for Egyptians. And I have witnessed this intense scrutiny myself, that when I was coming to Egypt, I was traveling with another activist, a friend of mine who is Palestinian, but he looks very Egyptian. And so while I, as a white person, could walk through and they would look at me and they say, oh, you're here, you're going to Sharm, you're going to the COP. And they barely looked at my passport. I paid for an Egyptian visa online, $25, did not need it. But his passport was looked at very closely. He was patted down every time. His belongings were searched through, and he was asked repeatedly if he was from Egypt and who he knew in Egypt. And it was only after they ran his Palestinian passport through the system that took quite a, an amount of time, that he would be allowed to go on and travel. So there's you know, and then when we got to COP, they scanned our passports. There are other articles about how the COP app itself doesn't really respect privacy, and may also be another situation that is trying to find out information on Egyptians. So that's our concern with doing protests to build the public pressure to move things towards what we need for climate justice, is that we don't want the Egyptian civil society that we're building solidarity with to suffer because we used our privileges to make protests at their expense. There is a demonstration that Egyptian civil society has called for on November 10th for people to wear white and to show solidarity with civil society activists. So we're planning on doing that. But as far as other protests, I've just heard a lot of caution and a lot of respect to be in solidarity with people like Sana Seif, who's fighting for her brother's life right now. And I hope that her conference today in the German pavilion, it's gotten lots of press coverage and is the right amount of pressure to free him, many activists like him.
Okay, excellent. Folks, you've been listening to a climate activist in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt at COP27. You're listening to the Green and Red podcast. Check us out at greenandredpodcast.org or check out our Patreon at patreon.com/greenandredpodcast. And we'll have more updates and a full episode at some point in the future on COP27. And stay safe out there, my friend. And hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Scott.